Could FDA-approved VYVGART, efgartigimod alpha FCAB, help your adult patients? Find out at VYVGARTHCP.com, where you can explore the mechanism of action, see the clinical trial data, and learn how to get your patients started on VYVGART. Visit VYVGARTHCP.com today. VYVGART is a registered trademark of Argenx.
This is Jose Merino, Editor-in-Chief of the Neurology Family of Journals. The Neurology Podcast provides practical information to neurologists and other clinicians to help them provide better care for their patients. Thanks for listening and have a great week.
This is Stacey Clardy, and today I'm speaking with Micaela Hernandez. She's a neurologist at Fleni in Buenos Aires, Argentina. She's the author of the article we'll be discussing today. The title is Transient Global Amnesia Recurrence, Prevalence and Risk Factor Meta-Analysis, and it's published in Neurology Clinical Practice in the May 18, 2022 issue. Now, Micaela, I know transient global amnesia as one of the most fun diagnoses that I ever get to make, especially when I'm on the neurology consult service. We often get to walk into the room, everyone's panicked, they don't know what's going on. We can very efficiently walk in, reassure everyone that the patient will be okay, they'll return to their normal functioning within hours, and they won't have residual deficits. So really a fun thing that we get to do as neurologists. But once we make the diagnosis, it gets a bit more challenging then to answer the follow-up questions that naturally come, like, what caused this to happen? Will it happen again? Which is why I was really excited to see your paper. So before we get to the answers you found, let's take a step back and review the diagnosis. So can you tell us, what is transient global amnesia by definition? And I suppose what I'm also asking there is, what doesn't qualify as transient global amnesia, but is a common mimic of the diagnosis?
Transient global amnesia, or TGA, is a pure amnesic syndrome that begins suddenly and lasts less than 24 hours. It affects primarily anterograde memory and, in a lesser degree, retrograde memory. As you just said in the example, it generates a lot of stress and fear for the patient and their relatives. The patient cannot generate new memories and presents disoriented and asks repetitive questions. We still don't know the exact pathophysiology, but we do know that it is reversible and often associated with triggers. I think the greatest challenge we find when facing a patient like this is to rule out those diagnoses that could present with an amnesic syndrome, but require specific treatment, such as an acute ischemic stroke, seizures, or a confusional syndrome. Performing a laboratory routine, a brain MRI, and an EEG could help to rule out this alternative diagnosis. Still, there are specific abnormalities we can find in brain MRI and EEG that are related to the TGA.
And in those subjects who have had an MRI or an EEG, how often are abnormalities present and what are they usually?
Regarding the EEG, frontal or temporal slow waves or epileptiform discharges could be found, although not necessarily. But if they are present, the transient epileptic amnesia has to be considered, and that is a totally different clinical entity. As for the MRI, the most common finding in the 2 to 5 days following the episode can be a punctate lesion in the CA1 region in the hippocampus, unilaterally or bilaterally. And that is a diffusion-restricted lesion that is transient. We found that around 17% of patients present findings in MRI and in the EEG. It is important to point out that findings in the MRI could vary depending on the time in which the image is performed and the quality of the image. And as for the EEG, when abnormal findings are present, clinical and MRI characteristics could help differentiate the episode from a seizure.
Right, because we would be looking for things like a small stroke, right? Or what other diagnoses have you noticed people misattribute as transient global amnesia initially?
Mostly ischemic strokes and also seizures. I mean, that's the most common differential diagnosis.
In your study, if I have it right, you screened 1,658 studies from Medline, LILACS database, and the MBASE databases. These were published anywhere between 1985 and about mid-2021. in either English or Spanish. And so of that large time period and three databases, you ultimately included 36 observational case control and cohort studies. Do I have those numbers right?
Yes, those numbers are right. Yes, they're correct.
Those patients had transient global amnesia according to one of two different diagnostic criteria, Kaplan's or Hodges and Warlow's diagnostic criteria. But with that in mind, how many total cases did you identify in your cohort, and how often did they have recurrence after their initial transient global amnesia episode?
Well, we identified 4,514 TGA cases with 544 recurrences. That represents a 12% recurrence, or 1 out of 8 patients.
Wow. Okay. So I don't think I knew recurrence was that common. What are the risk factors that you found for recurrence, and over what time frame? So if I'm talking to the patient, is it going to be months or years? And how significant is this association of recurrence? Give us more detail.
Well, I think that is a key question for daily practice. When the patient leaves the room, they probably want to know if this episode could happen again and if there is anything they should do or stop doing to prevent it. We first supposed that time could predict recurrence and expected that the more time elapsed between the event and the TGA, the more likely it was to recur. So to confirm that, we separated studies into those with less than 2 years follow-up, between 2 and 4 years, and more than 4 years. We didn't find significant differences between groups. We didn't detect an association between relapse and time in this analysis. And that could mean that the recurrence was more likely to occur in the first 2 years after the event. Then we analyzed potential risk factors based on the different current theories for its pathophysiology. So we explored cardiovascular risk factors, migraine and depression, personal history, ancillary studies, and triggers related to the event. We found that personal history of migraine and depression increased the risk of having a TGA in 2 and 4 times respectively. Also, sexual intercourse prior to the event as a trigger showed to increase the risk in 1 time.
There's a lot in what you said there. So the first thing I caught was that you're not seeing a ton of patients who are having the recurrence 10, 20, 30 years later. But in fact, they could have recurrence if it's going to happen relatively soon after the first event. So within months to the first 2 years, is that right?
That's correct. That could be between a couple of months and 2 years.
So you said that migraine, depression, and the episode occurring during sexual intercourse, these were all things that seemed to increase the risk of relapse. So let's first start with migraine and depression for my first question. I know your study wasn't powered to look at this, but I'm guessing you thought about it a fair amount. Any idea what about migraine or depression, for example, the cellular genetic level, should cause an increased risk for transient global amnesia? I know I'm asking you to speculate.
Yes, we've thought that, and that's a tough one. Still, it is not clear what causes a TGA. Perhaps with our results, we can say what mechanisms could be less likely to generate it. One of the things that led us to study this entity is its cryptic aspects in terms of pathogenesis. For a long time, we thought it could be a vascular phenomenon, and that hypothesis is not completely ruled out. Although new currents associated to phenomena such as cortical spreading depression. Our study is in these terms population-based and can offer little insight into the mechanisms, but the fact that migraine is a better predictor than, for example, hypertension or jugular reflux definitely forces us to consider the hypothesis of cortical spreading depression. This study is the tip of the iceberg of what my team has been preparing in terms of studying TGA in its clinical context. So maybe in the future we can repeat this talk and I will have more to tell you.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to know you're doing more work. I usually ask that somewhere at the end of the podcast, like what's next, but already we know to look out for more. So that's fantastic. And anything to try and sort this out, right? I do remember being taught about the arterial ischemia theory way back when I was in training and doing sort of MRA and things like that in these patients. And I had certainly never seen it in my own experience pan out. So it is interesting that some of these data, at least on the surface, you're saying seem to argue somewhat against that arterial ischemia theory. Is that right? Do I understand?
Yes. When analyzing the cardiovascular risk factors that are related to arterial damage, we found that none of them predicted an increased risk of recurrence. So Although we do not expect to explain the pathophysiology if the mechanisms were ischemic, it would be unlikely that a patient that has many cardiovascular risk factors would not present a large number of TGA events.
Now, let's go back to the sexual intercourse question. Now, this could be traumatic. If that's actually, if having your episode of transient global amnesia occurring during sexual intercourse is a risk for recurrence, this could really be traumatizing to patients. You know, I expect telling them to avoid sexual intercourse is not a realistic strategy. So what are we supposed to tell these patients? How do you counsel them?
Well, yes, it is definitely a tricky one. I mean, not only for sexual intercourse, but also for migraine or depression history. All the risk factors we found that predicted recurrence are situations to which one is frequently exposed. The patient probably had intercourse many times before, but only this time had a TGA. So there is clearly something else that is happening besides the trigger that we don't fully understand yet. By recognizing it is a benign episode associated with everyday activities, I would not expect the patient to avoid doing them. However, I would advise them about the possibility of a recurrence and recommend making a consult if similar symptoms occur, to exclude the differential diagnosis we've mentioned.
Right, with stroke and other things. And I suppose perhaps warning a potential partner might... I don't know. I don't know how long we'd go about that. We could leave that up to the patients, but at least if they, you know, information is always power. So if they know that it could happen,
at least let them know. Yes.
Yeah. Small chance, but. that's tough. Yeah. So along those lines, any other tips or advice that we should use from what we've learned here to help counsel our transient global amnesia patients? Now that you've taught me that recurrence is not that rare.
Well, transient global amnesia remains a mystery in many respects, so counseling patients can sometimes be challenging. First, we might tell them that even if they tried, they probably will not remember what happened during the TGA episode because the information could not be recorded due to a transient amnesic dysfunction. Secondly, we could encourage them to continue with their usual lifestyle as the exact relationship between triggers, risk factors, and TGA is not fully understood, but advise them about the possibility of having a new recurrence, when it is more likely to occur, and what to do if it does occur.
This is helpful. Thank you, Michaela, for sharing your wisdom and your approach to transient global amnesia. I feel better prepared to go a little more in depth. Certainly, it's still fun to tell everyone, when you see these patients acutely, that everything will be okay, but it is important to be able to give them some information once they have recovered from the event and for their friends and family, because it turns out, I guess it's not that rare in your population that it will recur, and certainly having the episode occur in the first place is fairly traumatizing to a lot of our patients. I certainly feel better prepared, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Stacy.
And once again, Michaela's paper, it's in Neurology Clinical Practice. You can find it. The title is Transient Global Amnesia Recurrence, Prevalence, and Risk Factor Meta-Analysis. Thanks so much for listening.
This is Stacey Clardy, your podcast editor. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please take a few moments to subscribe, rate, and review the Neurology Podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And remember, you can always head to neurology.org/podcast for our full list of past episodes, or you can also search by keyword in your podcast app for any neurology-specific topics you want to learn about.
The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.